To continue with centrism, we last left off with the turning to halacha. I want to give another example, just because it's so innocuous and so simple, is Rav Aaron Levine's books on business ethics. He answers all economic questions from the halacha. And I'm not going to go into detail, I'm just going to give you ones where it's quite different than the approach of modern orthodoxy. Is, for example, in one of his chapters dealing with intellectual property and copyright law, he openly says halacha only recognizes the intellectual property of the printer, as we know from 16th century Shuvas. Halacha does not recognize the rights of the author, like we start seeing in 18th, 19th century copyright law. Unlike Mishpat Evri in Israel, that uses already statements from the Netziv and others at the end of the 19th century to start generating intellectual property laws, he basically just says, no, halacha is unlike American law. We stop at the 16th century. We only protect the publisher, not the creator of what is. There isn't any need to respond to contemporary issues. You look at the Chuvas, you use your well-educated economic or legal eye, and you understand it from the Chuvas. It is not about extending it to new areas. Another case where he's quite different from modern orthodoxy, and you see the difference, is the Ramban on Asit HaTov HaYashar, that you have to go Lifnei Meshurat HaDin. For most modern Orthodox authors, the extreme case being of Walter Wurzberger, that is cited as paradigmatic for their having to, for their being an ethic. Levine reformulates it as a debate between Nachmanides and the Mordechai and the Bach, that where the Ramban says everyone should use a Asit HaTov HaYashar within a law court, the Mordechai says only if you're wealthy can you afford to do that. If not, everyone should follow the din. And then Aaron Levine cites the Bach, explaining that Mordechai, that when you have a worker-employer dispute, if the employer is wealthy and the worker is poor, you apply the Ramban's Lifnei Meshurat HaDin. So rather than a broad, intuitive, ethical approach, it is now a question of equity within certain types of legal cases, and that's all it gets applied to. Okay, that's a real difference of method and approach. In terms of meta issues, Rav Aaron Levine clearly says that halacha holds from self-interest as a principle. It's a supply-side economics. It's concerned with the seller's rights more than the buyer's. And in this, very much like those scholars who notice that rabbinic literature is almost always from the landowner's point of view and not from the sharecropper's point of view, he says that we now will follow the seller's rights, and that any form of social welfare and ethics can only be generated through supply-side self-interest. That, for example, cite a midrash about Sodom, in which altruism was mandated by law, and someone who didn't want to be altruistic was killed. So too, any form of liberal ideas or welfare states or Keynesian economy are like Sodom, in that you are now being punished. It's not serving your self-interest, and halacha works by self-interest. And the reason that stucco works is because it's in your self-interest to maintain the community, to maintain the welfare funds, to keep a community going. You are not doing it for altruistic reasons. You are doing it for the maintenance of the community. And like I said, these are all very simple cases, but on one hand, they really show a very different type of approach to the centrist authors. Okay, does anyone have any questions on these? Yeah, yes.
Does he recognize people like Keynes and Mises and Keynes and Mises about some problems that obviously cannot be addressed by halacha, or he always finds...
No, if it doesn't get solved by halacha, then we have no interest in it. We don't go beyond... What has to be solved is the application of halacha for now people who have MBAs and are going to law school. There's no problem being solved to keep up with American law.
What's the difference between the central approach to the international people?
The scientific question?
No, the last question.
Rav Blatt has an article dealing with it.
So you just cite other non-centrist groups, or
wherever, and reach and reaches it, and reaches an understanding of it. Certainly, with a lot of this new English literature, it tends to claim to be doing collection, but it's sometimes the collection produces something that goes beyond the sources because it clearly gets stamped. You know, the collections by Rav Bleich and Rav Levine and others clearly are going beyond their original sources. Okay? And now we move into somebody who is quite original, and that is Rav Herschel Schechter. And first of all, His canon is much bigger. Okay, he being, as he says, having Bekiyas Atzum and expecting it of his students also. His canon of Achronim is not just Brisk, but will also include Mishnah Berurah, Chazon Ish, Chassam Sofer, and a lot of times the final voice will be the Pesachei Tshuva on top of it. So if you really want to look at, you know, who he's using, is in some way he's treating all Achronim as if with a brisker analysis, meaning converting Chassam Sofer's, Chazon Ish's, Prima Gadim's, Shaptaz's to a logical brisker position, and then usually caps it off with Mishnah Berurah's Pesachei Tshuva and a few other of his favorite Achronim at the end. So the canon is very different, that where a modern Orthodox could be very happy to paskin straight from a Mechaber Ramah, or straight from a Rambam, or say that all they need is an Aruch HaShulchan, and that they're going to follow whatever it says, L'chom or L'kula. For example, that's usually what Rav Riskin says. He'll follow the Aruch HaShulchan, L'chom and L'kula. Here we now have a much bigger canon. It's not, as people will make out, that it's all L'chumrah or to the right. It's not. It's a very YU product. There are Chumrot and Kulot from Rav Schechter, but the canon has changed from just either being, meaning for a modern Orthodox, You know, there are many modern Orthodox rabbis who can get up and say, I'm doing nothing but the Chai Adam, nothing but the Aruch HaShulchan in the Lithuanian tradition, or even just getting up and saying, I'm doing nothing but Mechaber Ramah or the Rambam. Here we have a much wider canon of Achronim being used, so it seems to be on a very different playing field for modern Orthodox who are less comfortable reading through all those Achronim. And like I said, there are chumrot and kulot, but the halacha is not working through a hechad lo efsher or how do I deal with my modern congregants type of decision. The answers are being reached through analysis of achronim, through entering back into the realm of achronim. You know, so, you know, some of the kulot continue from Rav Soloveitchik, whether it's saying that mitzvah sayom kekulo is a nihug and not a zman, meaning it doesn't work at a clear time, or accepting a common sense science, or if it means taking vitamins on Shabbos, or moving electrical lamps, not considering them muksa because you're not worried that they're going to go out, all can see it seen as kulots compared to regular Ashkenaz halacha. On the other hand, he, like the Mishnah Berura, will construct shitot that have never been heard before, like his day and three quarters Yom Tov Sheni for a chutznik in Eretz Yisrael, in which you are holding the chumras of both. Which is not that you just put on, it's not just you put on tefillin, but a much more complex, you have to really hold the chumrah of both across the board. He also likes paradox. So one of his famous shirim is where will convince you that based on a one sheet that's rishon, karbanot are deraisa. Saying Karbanot in the morning is Deraisa, while Psukei Dezimra and Shema could be Derabanan. He loves finding those paradoxes and presenting them in a straightforward, straight-faced way. Once again, it is very different than a modern Orthodox approach, but it's valid as a Magid Shir, because, like, you know, to take that sort of approach. Okay, so that's not what the issue is. I'm not going to get into a discussion on specifics of halacha, but just know that sort of achronish Torah is not usually found among modern Orthodox rabbis. Okay? In terms of the real differences between, in terms of his theory, yes? He uses Glitzianic Shuvahs. His canon will include Glitzianas, Germans, and others, while Rav Shechter's canon tends to be Litza, Poland only. Even if it's broader, I mean, it'll include Chassam and Chassam Sofer, but Rav Bleich's canon will include everything that's in a Bar Ilan database. Okay? There is an element that goes in, and I haven't looked into his students. Okay, but there clearly is that element. The counterintuitive approach. The real difference is the chapter on Mesora in Nefesh HaRav, followed by Halachta B'Drachav. That's where the real innovation of Rav Shechter's theology comes in. And it's combined with the essays that he writes about the nature of Mesorah and Jewish history. So he has both a theory of Pesach and a theory of Jewish history. So don't interrupt me. Let me get through this. First of all, he holds that Pesach can only be done by somebody who has amazing erudition. And it's the rebellion of Korach to think that pulpit rabbis or lesser rabbis can have an opinion. Meaning there's a clear transference of authority from pulpit rabbis or people who give a little Gemara class someplace within the system to Rosh HaYeshiva. He says that outright. I mean, he takes from Soloveitchik's statement about Korach and common sense, which the original context was against the conservative movement, and now applies it to modern orthodoxy and pulpit rabbis. He holds that the Rav is identical with Rav Chaim of Brisk. Except for Zionism, the Rav and Rav Chaim of Brisk are the same. Okay? So in that there is many elements besides the eradication of any modern elements. It doesn't acknowledge how much the Rav and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik were involved in a Mizrahi project. It says we are part of the world of the Achronim, but it still creates a narrative that distinguishes centrists from the engaged yeshiva world, is you don't hear much praise for Rav Elchanan Wasserman, the Chafetz Chaim, the Stipler at Yeshiva University. They're not the Svarim that are sold. Even figures like Shlomo Fisher do not get read much at Yeshiva University. I mean, the narrative becomes still going as if all roads went through Brisk. The fact that President Revel went to Tells, or that most of the Rosh Yeshiva after the war were from Mir, really gets pushed aside. It's as if all roads went through the Rav back to Chaim of Brisk directly. That story, that narrative is an important part of centrism. You go Chaim of Brisk of Soloveitchik and now the current Rosh Yeshiva. The role of Tells and Mir and Mizrahi within YU doesn't get talked about. On the other hand, you do not have the sort of narrative like you would hear in Neri Yisrael or Chafetz Chaim, meaning the Gedolim of the middle third of the century tend to be skipped over in this narrative. He claims that since we are a continuation of Chaim of Brisk, we know Rav Chaim of Brisk from his letters rejected all forms of majority rule or discussion with lesser rabbis. All halacha should only be decided by Gedolim who have that Bekiyat Atzum. He holds that Gedolim have a special credibility and a special understanding that lesser rabbis do not have. He writes that Gedolim don't have to show their reasoning or offer cogent arguments. Just by the fact that they're Gedolim, we should be able to rely on them. He will say that anyone who thinks you can go back to the text and figure things out on your own is incorrect. Gedolim, as he says, has a special understanding. But there is now a phrase coined by Rav Meir Twersky in a series of articles called Torah intuition, which is now being used. Rosh Yeshiva have a Torah intuition. So textuality alone is not enough. He says that Gedolim have a Ruach Hashem that guides them. He writes that the foundation of Orthodoxy is emunah pshuta and emunas chachamim. Okay? His source for why you need emunah pshuta is when Rav Soloveitchik in his drashot talks about you need a childlike simplicity, you need a childlike enthusiasm when you study Torah. Now gets interpreted rather than an emotive statement, it gets interpreted as that we don't need machshava. He also writes that any sociological, psychological, or historical analysis of Pesach is a rejection of the divine status of Torah. Okay? Any psychology, sociology, or historical analysis of Pesach is a rejection of the divine status of Torah. And finally, we don't use sociology even to explain anti-Semitism or Zionism, because we are a people that dwell alone. And that it's all about cultivating oneself now, to use the phrase coined by now several other Rosh Yeshiva, of being the Torah personality. Those of Shech Lashir tend to use the phrase to be a Bar Chachi or some equivalent. And that's a real change from the modern Orthodox rhetoric. It's very far from the Rissol Roth type of discussion. In terms of the historic issues, let's put them on the table. Now, Rav Schechter did do a master's in Ravel, and he has an interesting dialectic use of it throughout his career, in terms he will use pieces of what he learned in his critical studies to reformulate a very new version of trying to answer some of the same questions. So he's got a series of lectures that he gives every so often, but they're really integrated into his shiur about the history of Torah Shebaal Peh. Is that originally Torah was Torah Shebaal Peh, and what really counts is the Mesorah. All of Judaism is based on Mesorah. Hence, there is no hope. There is the, except for the fact that we now were allowed to write it down as Torah Shebichtav. Other than that, there are no other special heterim or hora'at sha'ah involved. We have to have a continuity of the Mesorah. He will treat historically the Brisker statements based on the Rambam's introduction to the Mishneh Torah, that when it says Ravina Ravashi Sofara, it means now that the Gemara is now binding upon us as a Sofa Hara, and that we are basically treating the Gemara as a datum in which we bring ourselves to. All Gedolim after the Gemara are lesser status, meaning there's a clear rejection in the Brisker tradition of the Kesef Mishnah on Hilchot Mamrim of Kimu, that the reason we accept Gemara and past generations is only because of Kimu V'Kiblu, Perek Bet of the Hilchot Mamrim. Yes? Okay, so know that in other places that's seen as a contradictory position. If you want prior cases, there's a shock on it. There's an Encyclopedia Talmudit dealing with the issue. If you want now, even Rav Shlomo Fisher has a Mamar in Beit Yishai post saying that yes, all the Gedolim, like the Briskers, held from the Hakdama of the Rambam Mishneh Torah, but you know, I, Shlomo Fisher, go back to Mamrim and the Ketz of Mishnah as if they're two separate opinions. The fact that they can be harmonized is not my concern for now, but that one becomes the primary one. We understand everything through the Hakdama rather than vice versa. The Masorah is seen as the basis for all halakha. He cites the cases of the need that's kosher species of animals and birds need to be known. I mean, kosher species of birds need to be known through Masorah. What? All birds need to be known through Masorah. And really extrapolates that to halakha as a whole, rather than saying that Masorah is needed for a handful of cases, Masorah now is needed for halakha as a whole. Hence, even if it seems to be a text out there that would permit something, even if you can make a logical argument from the text that would permit something, even if there seems to be an obscure rishon that permitted something, it doesn't matter. We need a continuous Masorah in order to prove something. He does seem to hold Lo Ra'inu. There's a quote in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch whether Lo Ra'inu is a raya or not. The fact that we never saw it before, can that be used as a proof for anything? The answer, rather than getting involved in that question, which deals with Italy and the Shulchan Aruch question that know that women were shochtim in Italy and what do we do with it in Eastern Europe, the Schechter's answer is that everything has to be understood through Masorah. So therefore there cannot be any new ideas that are not part of the Masorah. Halacha cannot be overturned based on new ideas, based on original understandings. Yes, you can have chidushim, new interpretations, like the Mishnah Brura is going to come up with new interpretations of the Achronim all the time. Rav Schechter uses the Mishnah Brura as his example. You can have new interpretations of it. But you cannot bring up a new idea. His relationship to Rav Moshe's Psak is a much more complex issue that I'm not getting into here in terms of how he relates to it. He says that what goes on in a shear of a true Baal Masorah is Chiddush, but it's not Shinoi. Besides the idea of Masorah, we introduce the idea of Psak. Once something is determined, it becomes determined. The ideas of judicial review, or going back to rejected shitot, or now really treating all the shitot in the YU Svarim Sev, all the Rishonim that are out there, as being live options, is rejected. Because once there is a Psak, there is a Psak. And therefore we have to have humility before the Psak. And to truly be part of the Baalei Masorah, you have to have humility before prior generations of Psak. If you are a Mechadesh, that ipso facto, you are not really part of the Baalei Masorah because you lack the true quality of humility. He will have a pulling from various tshuvot that at various points will equate tzedukim, Karaites, early Christians, Reform Judaism. He will draw the equation in the strong sense, ke'ilu, there's some continuity between tzedukim, early Christians, Karaites, and Reform movements. And you will find through the centuries tshuvot that will make various arguments to that effect. But here it now gets presented as history. Also, we have a statement that bizmaneinu, we have to be most machmir in those things that modern Jews find the most difficult. So things that modern Jews find the most difficult, we have to be the most machmir. Things that are not big issues, we can be mekil. So there's already a built-in sort of anything that a modernist will want to introduce. There's a built-in saying we've got to react most machmir to those cases. Hold on. And finally, we have an idea that only the halachic history exists. Jewish history is nothing but halachic history, and it certainly has nothing in common and cannot be embedded or have any relationship to Gentile history or the history you learn in college. In terms of derech halimud, then I'll take a round of questions. There is a greater emphasis on halacha lemaaseh. Chidushim are nice, but what counts is halacha lemaaseh. So unlike the real world of Reb Chaim of Brisk or Shimon Shkaf, it's not about the Shimon Shkaf that I can go through open doors in brand new ways. I can be Mechadesh Nu Mahalchim. Here it's about being halacha lemaaseh, not chidushim. He also openly says not everyone who learns today will be a Rosh Yeshiva. We've got to teach Balabatim what they need to learn. Halacha lemaaseh, basic bekiyas, basic texts. Not everyone should be learning lumdas. You have to teach people what they need. Finally, when we come to secular studies, he holds that the sciences are value neutral, but the humanities are chukas agayim. And over the years, there's been a continuous statement, you know, where art is usher for both Al-Tifnu and for Znus, all literature has some, almost all literature has the same problems. And his attitude toward non-Jews tends to be Am Levado Yishkon, or even when he's quoting figures from Western Europe like Rav Hirsch, he'll quote Rav Hirsch dealing with Romans, how the Romans were immoral, not Hirsch saying or Lagoyim. He'll be very selective in what he will quote on those topics. Now I'll take a round of questions. Yes.
I think you addressed the idea that there was going to be more from the Minnesota.
That what?
That Gishkov, the outcome of Walker, that was in a sort of kind of dynamic legislation where the Congress can really have this huge power of stock to just suspend things totally and to revocate things and make their MILSA and when you tie together make their MILSA and Horash Gishkov, the outcome, said that all of them are really allowed to do it.
You're allowed to do it, but then he says that he will give the caveats in other places, saying, one, we don't do it after the Sofer Rav of the Gemara. Two, we certainly don't do it for modernist needs or for where people are being nichshal. That's clearly where we don't apply it. Three, he says, yes, there's a special quality given to Chachamim, and therefore they don't have to show their reasonings behind things. But it doesn't take on its own direction. In fact, it always becomes qualified. So what's your question?
The answer is
he will, that's part of his lectures on Masorah, and that's what he's got an interesting dialectic. He knows enough history, enough external sources, that you will see he will deal with all sorts of case, meaning I'm not going the full version, he will deal with questions of Gaonim, he will deal with Tshuvas, he will deal with some of even academic literature. He will deal with the Netziv's introductions, and all be woven in saying that there is a Mesorah, sometimes it veers, and trying to find an answer to fit in to each case. Okay? Yes. It has the meaning, there's no one place. I'm culling this from lots of shirim from different places. Even the tapes that the OU put out do not give any definitive starting or ending point, and each tape really becomes an independent, you know, answering up questions rather than a consistent theory. Yes?
Who qualifies to be this, like, gullible people who think they're sovereign without explaining it to everybody?
You have to have the kiyas atzum. You have to already be a shimish talmidei chachamim. You have to be a follower of somebody who's part of the Mesorah. You have to show the humility by accepting the past generations, what they thought.
He
gives a list of criteria. The answer is it's not, even that is not so simple. He'd have to fit into his canon. There's clearly points that he is less comfortable with some of Israeli psak from some of the Israeli figures because it's not thinking in his very Eastern European way, and he's going to leave it as a Sarachian. He's less comfortable with certain Polish psak, for example, where Frimmer, the Kasher Glover, functions a lot of times as his Sarachian, you know, at his penultimate moment in a shir, because its method is rather different, because Poland involved much more machshava within the psak. So it's not even an easy answer. There are clearly people that he knows, others are in his, they're in other people's canon, but he's less comfortable with. Okay? But he's very respectful. Very, very, very respectful of, you know, those he knows that make sense to other people. Yeah. It doesn't, it's from, he's his own person. Okay? Yes?
What is that?
He became a posek the moment the really after the Rav was nifter and the OU took him as the posek, and then Rebelsky also. That was that moment where he became the posek. If he became a posek, well, that's those same years, 20 something years ago, when also he started checking Erevin and giving his intro to Erevin Shir and checking Erevin. So it started with Erevin and Kashrut, and then it expanded from that. What do I know about YU? I don't know. But clearly there was a point that he was accepted as the posek 20 something years ago. Yes.
Isn't the case that most of the rabbis follow up with their more complicated shadows?
I don't know what the question is. There's clear, there are certain will, others will call other Rosh Yeshiva here, or others will call other poskim. I don't think, I mean, part of it is that we are already too close to do the hard data, but I think if we went through an RCA roster, you'd get probably a real spectrum of different places, different addresses for Shilas. Yes? What did you say? Yeah, well, women's issues clearly went the direction of L'chumra. But once again, it's not L'chumra, it's an axiological line in the sand. But a lot of basic, you know, what to do with the, in a chinuch situation. He can be very, you know, you know, what do you do with a child from this sort of background and this family, and you want to integrate in the system, he can be incredibly make-feel and very, very understanding of the situation. Or a lot of either Hilchos Shabbos, some of the more basic Hilchos Shabbos that involves Metzius, or even the fact that he'll mention things offhandedly that we don't hold Cham Mixasov, Cham Kulo in big stainless steel industrial things in which it's, you know, 20 feet long. We don't hold that, you know, the fact that you have, you know, long corridors of stainless steel, that once one area is touched, the other area becomes us. And he'll say that offhanded. But nobody has gone through and done any real analysis of his derech psika. You know, there may be an excitement to want to do it, but it definitely does need to be done. Yes?
A few years ago, Jeremy Hillman, I think, collected like 100 or 200 of his Pisgei Halacha, unofficially, and then, what?
He went to one of the yeshivot and he collected all the questions, all the certain amount of questions that were asked in Israel, and he published it.
What was this?
Israel questions.
Yeah.
Well, I've checked where we go, every so often goes down.
Right.
Here is Israel, and people have question and answer session.
Right.
And there's some questions that always come up, but there's some that
don't. Right. So the answer is, if I remember
that
right,
that's out there.
That's right. Because that was, once again, as the blogs pointed out back in the days when they were under control, there really was a sense of these were questions of very confused 17-year-old kids, and he was really fielding them as who they were, and it really wasn't public statements. They were not big issues. He was fielding the sublime to the ridiculous from them because they needed the hand-holding, and that is correct. It was not a public statement. That's why I'm not using it. It should not be used. Everything that somebody says, not that it's off the record, but you have to understand the context. If a bunch of 17-year-olds need their hand held and he's willing to field questions, that doesn't mean that he has that he has deep answers on all those questions.
Also, Michael Wilson said that in Shir he said that Hosek is just a Mara Maka, and that there's no real stop. How does that fit in with what you just said here? Assuming that's true.
I don't know what that... It depends what that means. If it means that we're not creating any new Horah and we're continuing the Masorah, it fits in. Okay? I do not think he means it in the Rav Sherlo, Rav Gilad, Rav Aviner sense that says it's all open in the books and therefore you don't need Gedolim anymore, all you need is to understand the books. In that sense, I don't think he takes it to mean that.
Also, do you know, does anyone know here if he eats turkey then?
What?
That's
right. Okay. Yes.
I've heard
hold on. Can everyone quiet down, and then I'm going to please get Logan go on. I don't want this to become a
I've heard this in our culture. It's true that like skiing is also, or getting like a handstand for like a amusement park is also. Does he make stock like that? Or
yes, he does.
So where does that
It comes from off the hand from Shear. Well, he has a lot of offhand, and that's why that should not be judged. There's a quality to it of a lot of off the cuff statements, and really judge him by Nefesh HaRav and his statements that he says. There are certain statements he'll say year in, year out, month by month. On the other hand, there are a lot of off-the-cuff statements that people can collect. You know, you were sitting next to Merachasana, and he said something. And I don't like that whole game about any gadol or any great figure, because, you know, deal with their real opinions rather than a lot of the off-the-cuff statements. Yes?
One of my friends in maybe what you're calling the Yeshiva world said that among the elite in Israel, Russia, they feel like a sense of defensiveness about Rosh Hashanah. They feel like Rosh Hashanah is always trying to prove that he's really part of their world. and like, you know, they like don't really care or whatever, like they be, I don't know, do you think that they're like this?
Is there a question there?
Yeah.
The answer is we'll deal with that when we come at the other end to the events of 1996 till now, in which sociologically there seem to be certain changes going on. I will come back to that point. Okay? One other point about Rav Schachter is he's a very strong Zionist believer of Eretz Yisrael, and will get up in the heart of yeshivish communities and give a shiur about the importance of being a religious Zionist. And that it's a halakhic requirement. And his proof becomes the Chafetz Chaim and the Avnei Nezer, both of them anti-Zionists. Meaning his categories are entirely halachic, so when the Chafetz Chaim paskins you have to live in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Schachter takes that to mean if you live in Eretz Yisrael it's got to be in realistic terms, so therefore an anti-Zionist becomes a Zionist. Or the very famous tshuva of the Avnei Nezer on the topic of Avram Bornstein, and who was an openly known anti-Chovevei Tzion, anti-Zionist, who still paskin the mitzvah to live in Israel. Rav Schachter is going to then take that as another one of his proofs, meaning he will use the halachic arguments to live in the land of Israel, not just to prove you have to live in the land of Israel, but that you have to be concerned with Klal Yisrael, and that you have to be concerned with the Medinat Yisrael, meaning that treating a halakhic category of Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael as if they are one. And that's a huge element in centrism. A huge, huge element of centrism. Of blurring the lines between the halachic analysis of Eretz Yisrael and any modern conceptions of Medinat Yisrael and its needs as a secular country working by secular means. So there is an understanding now of Eretz Yisrael as if it was a halachic state. So you will even find find statements of centrist Rosh Yeshiva from YU that really issues about land and defense and economy should be decided by Rosh Yeshiva. Because the halachic analysis is the same as the Medina analysis. Now that doesn't play too much of a role because the Israeli government is not asking YU's Rosh Yeshiva very much. But it does play a role in the very formation of the centrist understanding of reality, or the understanding within centrist communities, in which Israel is understood entirely through halachic categories. Neither the Merkaz Harav's Agadata Machshava connection of your soul categories, nor the secular categories. It is entirely understood through halachic categories. Okay. Yes.
I think that maybe influenced nowadays how so many people go to Israel for
Yes, that's right. That it now becomes halachic to spend time in Eretz Yisrael. And it becomes an interesting mixture of, you know, to go and spend time in the Larome and, you know, eating out and eating out in restaurants twice a day becomes a halachic imperative. So that curious, now I don't think Rav Schechter meant that, but it becomes a curious understanding that is a real defining point of centrism. Okay, go on as many missions as many times a year to visit Israel and spend money there and buy things. And I don't bring you into the rabbi. I'm not going into the don't go there.
Okay, well then, he does some economics and land of man's power from 7. He also believes that military decisions are very socially decided by Rosh Hashanah.
There's a general consensus that those things come out now under the names of YU Rosh Yeshiva. They give their opinions on these things. Now, like I said, it's not a major issue because nobody, you know, it does not make Ma'ariv or Idiot these pronouncements, but it does color the centrist communities in which Israel is now understood in halachic categories. Okay, it better be Tremaine because I want to go on. Yeah. Okay, moving on to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Now, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, we have the benefit that in the last few years, 3 volumes of his writings have come out. So we really have his definitive statements. And while he had some essays from the early 1960s, including his response to Yitz Greenberg, his essays were formed in the 80s and 90s, many of them either given at Orthodox forms, in which he is always seen as the structuring speaker, or they become, he had a dozen very famous shirim that he would give regularly in Yeshivat Har Etzion. And it makes him interesting is that his father was a rabbi doctor, teacher at Central, and he also is a rabbi doctor in English literature, so his articulation of his views are very, very concise and urbane, so you can really analyze them. Okay, for those who don't know, he first went to Chaim Berlin. So there is that Rav Huttner influence. He will always surprise you by starting a topic with a Maharal or a Rav Huttner type opinion before going into what he actually holds. He was responsible for reviving the Kollel here in the 1960s before handing it off to Rav Schechter. Okay, in the time of when all the modern Orthodox rabbis were formed in the 40s, 50s, and onward, there was not even a Kollel here, meaning except for your 9-to-3 learning, all those rabbis of the 50s did nothing more than that for 2 years. So now that there would be a kollel in the afternoon, there could be a second seder, or even to encourage someone to stay beyond 2 years, was due to his influence. And then when he moves to Israel, it's not that he then remains just connected to YU. He has the influences from his co-Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Amital, and he became close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was part of Rav Shach's Bez Din together with Rav Eliashiv. And in terms of his approach, first of all, he believes in the analytic approach to learning. The Gemara must be treated as an idealistic document. We have to see wonders through the Torah, which is a statement quoting Psalm 119, used in Ramban and the Zohar to talk about Kabbalah, and quoted by most Achronim as the need for Panimi or Torah, gets transferred to Lumdus. You have to see the Panimi or Torah, which is Lumdus, and it's an essential point that you really have to learn in a Lumdus way. And then if you don't learn using Lumdus, you reduce the Torah to a pedestrian status without passion and mystery. Not my topic here of Aaron's approach is both learning the difficulties of the page and then doing the conceptual analysis off the page, meaning asking the big questions and then saying, well, how can we then plug in the Gemara and the Rishonim into the bigger questions? But he is very much against any sort of dealing with the narrative of the text itself, meaning how does one line fit into the next, is not his question. What? No, because that's what I'm going to talk about in a minute. Because his approach to English literature will also be anti-realist, new critical. Let's deal with the theme of something within this poem. Let's not do the older historic line-by-line approach in which you have to understand it. Meaning, let's not do the old approach of having to read lines, every line, and explicate each line of Shakespeare and know what he meant. Let's deal with the complexity of Hamlet's character. So in fact, his approach to English literature that he was trained in complements this approach, that you don't do the line-by-line approach. And if you want, there's a series of about three articles by Rav Krumbine, have recently come out, that actually deal with Rav Lichtenstein's Derech HaLimud. One of them got translated into English in last year's... Ali Sefer, the Jewish Action, just, you know, they paraphrase, they all want to show and paraphrase one paragraph in it, but the Ali Sefer from last, Alon Schwartz, whatever it's called, the English journal from last year. We're going to start with what does he tell his students. And he tells his students, you have to shape your personalities according to Torah values. Halacha should be the norm by which you understand reality. It is to shape your axiology, your norms, your worldview. Meaning it's not that you're coming with modern or realistic concerns, but no, Torah has to shape your reality. And that's what the goal of the yeshiva life is. But in terms of Derech HaLimud, Rav Aaron has a very famous speech between Torah Emet and Torah Chesed. Torah Emet, maybe it's loosely based on the Sosa's introduction, is Torah Emet, is with the pristine Torah of truth, but we in the Beit Midrash do Torah Chesed, which is being the creative centripetal thrust of diverse and creative interpretations of Torah, which have always been done by Chachmei Yisrael. And that creative approach is what was why we do the conceptual approach. And Rav Aaron holds that even ordinary Jews or Balabatim, or when you've left yeshiva, you still should only learn the conceptual approach. Yes, he knows there are many out there who believe in Bikiyut or Mishnayot or Halacha Lamaseh, but he thinks that really what counts is only the conceptual approach. Ula, in terms of how you should live your life, Ula Avda Ula Shamra, the mandate to Adam becomes a La'avda, to serve, means you have to know that you're born into society. There's no such thing as individual man. Okay, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is a very strong anti-liberal against the liberalism of Rousseau, Mill, Locke. We are not individual human beings. We are born in society. To think the individual man or romanticism is the source of society is idolatry. Life cannot be about pleasure, self-fulfillment. And therefore we know, I mean, he has all sorts of critiques of hedonism, critiques of abortion, critiques of idle hands. One has to have a serious work ethic in life and contribute to the improvement of society. And his method for proving these things, he's got a very interesting method for generating machshava. For example, he will cite that Misachek Bekuvia, a dice player, is pasul la'edus, and then extrapolate from that that the halacha shows you have to be part of yeshivo shel olam, you have to be part of society and not someone who's outside of society. I mean, he'll take halachic principles and globalize them into machshava points. He will not use sifrei machshava. He will use arba shomrim to say we have a responsibility towards society. Sometimes he'll quote the Gemaras directly, but a lot of times it's extrapolations. When he does sometimes modernize these halachas, he will modernize them with quotes either from his father-in-law, the Rav, or through using the Meshech Chachma. He will openly reject the approaches of Sadia, Maimonides, Albo, and Rav Hirsch, which either give greater emphasis to the individual or to functionality or to mitzvot. Meaning, for his point of view, what counts is a halachic personality. And the halachic personality is an idealistic end in itself. So approaches that are more functional, like Albo and the Rambam, approaches that are more mitzvah-centered, like the Rambam, are not really part of the weave. What? Or even Rav Hirsch. He comes out clearly, the reason we do mitzvot is not for functionality, like many of the Rishonim, not for spirituality, like the traditionalists Shadal and Hirsch, nor for redemption. We do mitzvot because of commanded. We have to have a theocentric worldview, not an anthropocentric worldview. We have to submit to the divine will. And that's very important. Mitzvot are not about symbolism like Hirsch. They are not to achieve any functions like Rav Berkowitz. They are about submission to divine will. Okay, some quick questions on that. But yes?
Where does the conceptual Gemara method come from? Where is the source?
What are its sources? It's going to be in Reb Chaim of Risk. It's going to be in the Rav. It's going to be in the Ketzos. And okay, so therefore you can read it. Krumbine has an article comparing Reb Chaim of Risk, the Rav, and Rav Aaron in terms of their differences in method. As he's definitely doing in that method, because for example, Reb Chaim would create a chiluk and then give you a nafkamina, and the Rav was much more on the daf, Rav Aaron could come in and say, you know, what is the function of chazaka? You know, completely off the daf, and then cull whatever Gemara is going to be showing him to answer an off the daf question. So there are differences. But that difference is already asked, not as modern orthodoxy, is where he fits in as Derech Halimut.
Where's that?
Go in, what's the name of the Gush journal?
In
the Hebrew one is, it's in, I'll tell you in a second, there's an article in Alei Etzion 12. There's one pretzat which is called Honor Book of the Method of Learning. There's one pretzat derech tfume kodshim with Zaharot in Mali and Akodesh from the Yeshivat Karmet Sur. There's Reb Chaim to the Rav to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein in Nituim 9. And in Nituim 11, there's Avi Wolfish, who's got a response giving some more slightly different approach. Okay, but those are not the last word. Those are really starting words. Because the same way we're having a class now in modern orthodoxy, to go back and now ask what was Derech Limud of various Achronim is already a very self-reflexive turn. So these are really starting articles, because there are other people out there who are now starting to write articles about the Chazon Ish and about others. Because we are at a self-reflexive moment. Yes?
The idea that we do mitzvahs because of our dreams is that they can come
out. No. No, it's actually his own thing. I've discussed this with Talmidim. The Rav always talks about commitment and about the self and about how we have to commit. Rav Aaron lacks that language. It's theocentric. There's a divine command. There's a divine Torah, and we automatically have to submit ourselves to it.
There's a story in
Yeah, so the answer is no, it's not. I mean, in YU there are people who try to combine the two, who try to say that Rav Aaron is really the Rav. They're really very different philosophies.
Why then not
Why? Because of the context there. The context there is not the same context. There it deals homo religiosus versus halachic man. That we already have formal rules that don't need an emotional input. It's not serving the same function. I know there are people in YU who will try to harmonize it. Yes? Let's get to the theology. I'm barely started on Rav Aaron. In terms of one of his interesting points is the need for ethics and moral vision. And he has an essay about, is there an ethic outside of halacha? And he says that the universal ethics of mankind should be part of the ideology of a Ben Torah, but the universal is not given its own voice. It always needs to be translated into halakhic categories. So unlike Rabbi Wurzberger, who said this, we have these covenantal intuitions, which can function independently of the halakha, for Rav Aaron, ethics always must be explained as halakha. And even if it can't be in halacha, it's sometimes easier when the universal values don't conflict with halacha.